from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, the head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee sparked outrage from abortion rights groups when he said last week that the committee would keep funding candidates who oppose abortion rights. We look at how this issue could play out as Democrats try to expand their support while galvanizing the base. Then at 9:30. Outside Lands is starting today in Golden Gate Park, and the Music and Arts Festival is celebrating its 10th anniversary. We preview the headliners, including Gorillaz and The Who, and look back on what's becoming the country's biggest independently operated music festival. That's all next on Forum. Join us. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Democrats see the midterm elections as a crucial time to regain lost power in Congress, but divisions are emerging about how far the party should go to broaden its appeal. The head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee said last week the committee would fund candidates who oppose abortion rights, and that sparked outrage from Planned Parenthood and other groups that it goes against the core principles of the Democratic Party to do this. We look at the party's struggle to appeal to their base while expanding their support and get your thoughts in this opening half-hour Forum. Joining me is Marisa Lagos. She is a reporter for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. Good morning, Marisa Lagos.
Morning, Mina.
Also with us is Claire Foran. She's associate editor at The Atlantic. Good morning, Claire Foran.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us this morning. Marisa Lagos, could I start with you and just remind us what happened last week?
Yeah, so last week this kind of bubbled up, although I will say that it's kind of been simmering all year long. So as you mentioned, Congressman Ben Ray Lujan basically made some comments. He's the head of the Democrats' fundraising arm for Congress, saying that there, quote, is no litmus test for Democratic candidates. And a few months ago, we saw a similar sort of kerfuffle when the DNC chair, the head of the party, and Bernie Sanders campaigned for a candidate for mayor in Omaha who is anti-choice. And so I think this speaks to some broader, you know, sort of challenges for Democrats right now around what they want the party to stand for, how they really think, like what the path is to regaining majorities in the Senate and House. But unlike some issues, maybe like single payer, this one is a little bit different. I mean, I think when you think about Democrats and Republicans, this is one of the issues I think most people assume really separates the two. And so I think, you know, some of it has to do with, obviously, this is a very personal issue to women, and it touches on so many issues, health, economics. It's not just about abortion, obviously. And then also the fact that men have been the ones saying this in a lot of these cases, I think is part of it. But we've also seen, you know, Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader, make similar comments. So,
well, Ben Ray Lujan's comments provoked this reaction from Elise Hogue, who is the president of NARAL, and she called it an ethically and politically bankrupt strategy to continue to fund candidates who oppose abortion rights. Claire Foran, why is this an issue this year? My understanding is that the DCCC has been funding candidates who oppose abortion rights.
Well, so yes, the overall idea that the party will not have a litmus test isn't novel. On the issue of abortion or just generally ideological litmus tests is something that passed the CCC chairman, including Rahm Emanuel, who was the chair when the party last retook the House in 2006. That was a position that he also reportedly took, was to say, you know, we're not going to look at candidates and evaluate them on ideological litmus tests. We're going to look at who's a good fit for the district. So it's not new per se for a chairman to say that, but I think part of the backlash is both because groups like NARAL, Pro-Choice America, so pro-choice groups have actually, I mean, they're very influential kind of allies to the Democratic Party, and they've gained a lot of political ground in recent years within the party. So if you look at the 2016 platform that the Democratic Party adopted during the past presidential election, it went further than it ever has before in sort of enshrining some of these ideas that pro-choice advocates have been pushing for a long time, including calling for a repeal to the Hyde Amendment, which is a provision that bans federal funding for abortion in most cases. So really, pro-choice activists are influential in the party, and they've seen a lot of gains, and they don't want those to – now there's sort of this fear that maybe everything's in flux as the party kind of considers what it needs to do and how it needs to go forward. And they really don't want all the progress that they feel that they've made to sort of erode or be erased in this moment of kind of instability for the party. And I think that that's what's driving a lot of the backlash. There's sort of this sense of we've come so far on our issues among pro-choice activists, and we need to really draw a firm line in the sand, and then just this fear that maybe the party will be willing to sacrifice some of these things it's committed to in the past, like in its platform, in the hopes of winning over conservative voters or Trump voters, or maybe as it tries to moderate to win back some of the power that it's lost.
Are they also concerned about the current political environment and also the fact that Republicans have control of Congress, and they've talked about defunding Planned Parenthood, for example?
That's certainly, I think, heightened the sense of outrage. There's a sense of, you know, when I've spoken with pro-choice activists, there's sort of a sense of now is not the time to send a message for the Democratic Party to send any kind of message that could be interpreted as wavering, essentially, on its kind of commitment to abortion access at a time when, you know, Republicans control Congress and Trump is in the White House, a president who, you know, campaigned talking about promises of appointing justices of the Supreme Court who might overturn Roe v. Wade. So I think that's contributed to a sense of outrage. But also, a key question here is, if Democrats retake Congress, what would that majority look like? And for pro-choice activists, if that majority ends up having pro-life Democrats in it, that's going to make it that much harder for them to try to sort of enact some of these policy promises that have ended up in the platform, which right now are kind of like a wish list that hasn't actually been enacted. And they're thinking about what's the next step? How do we translate that into actual legislative achievements? And if the kind of Democrats that get elected to Congress include pro-life Democrats, that's going to make it harder.
I mean, well, to your point,
Marisa Lagos.
Yeah, to your point about sort of like the current political climate, I mean, it's not just obviously about, you know, Trump and the current Congress, but also what's happening at the state level, where we've seen a lot of the rollbacks of these rights occur. And so, you know, Republicans have the vast majority of state houses. They have 34 governorships, or 35. I think we just had somebody switch. So I think that, you know, and then if you look at the Supreme Court and the potential for Trump to get even one or two more appointments, there's sort of a larger picture here that's happening that goes really beyond just this Congress.
Yes, I think there was a story just this morning about how Texas is considering making women who want abortions have a separate insurance plan, even in cases of rape. So you're talking about, yes, efforts at the state level to try to roll back some of the protections around abortion as well. I want to put this out to our listeners. I just want to get their thoughts during this opening half hour about whether or not they think that the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee should fund candidates who oppose abortion rights, and why or why not. We're talking about the way abortion has emerged as a divisive issue for Democratic congressional leaders at a time when they're trying to expand their base, and they may see not sort of closing the purse to those candidates who are pro-life as a strategy. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us at KQED Forum or email us at forum@kqed.org. We're talking with Marisa Lagos of KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and Claire Foran, Associate Editor for The Atlantic. Claire Foran, I mean, how many Democrats who don't support abortion rights are actually running right now? Or likely
that's
to
a
run?
Great, yeah, that's a great question because right now, to some extent, so what the DCCC chairman was talking about with kind of this question of will they fund candidates, the DTRIP right now is in this stage of kind of helping to recruit candidates to run. And they're kind of handpicking or trying to kind of pick out candidates that they think will be you know, general election winners in competitive districts. And that process is underway right now. But the DCCC emphasized to me in my reporting that as they go along that recruitment process, they're not actively trying to recruit pro-life candidates, and they sort of emphasized that you know, there's not – that largely at this point, this is sort of a hypothetical conversation of what would happen if a pro-life Democrat wins a primary and gets to a general election, because the general election stage is where the DTRIP would typically put funding and resources behind a candidate. They don't usually get involved in a primary in the sense of endorsing or funding a candidate. So I've been looking into that question of – you know, are there pro-life Democrats actually running right now? And I haven't found a lot of names for Congress. There is one person who's come across my radar. I believe his name is Paul Spencer, and he's running for a House seat. And I think that's in Arkansas. But he's somebody who, you know, at this point, might be a long shot candidate. We're not really talking about a ton of concrete scenarios right now, but I think pro-choice activists want to kind of draw kind of a line of where they want the party to be now, while it is still more of a hypothetical scenario, so that as we do get closer to general elections, the sort of battle lines are drawn on this, and they would like to kind of have this fight now and pressure the party to kind of back away from this idea that it might fund candidates, so that by the time we get to a general election, you know, maybe things will look different.
Well, let's hear what our listeners have to say. We have a lot of calls coming in. Rosie in Richmond. Hi, Rosie.
Hi. I have to tell you, I'm really shocked and outraged that the Democratic Party would consider supporting somebody who is pro-life. I think that is a total it's just giving in to the most radical of the Republicans. And it makes us look, makes Democrats look really weak and wishy-washy. I think we need to hold firm. We're talking about 50% of the human race here that we're treating just, you know, kind of cavalierly. And, you know, that's really wrong. That's all I have to say. I would resign from the Democratic Party and probably never vote for a Democrat if that person were pro-life. That is so outrageous. I can't even believe they're considering being so stupid.
Well, Rosie, I thank you for sharing your opinion. Marisa Lagos?
Well, yeah. And I mean, Claire can speak to this because it was in her story, but she had some interesting numbers around, you know, who supports abortion rights. And really, it is not just hardcore Democrats, right? This is something that does cross some party lines and also among independents, which especially in California, for example, is a growing sort of part of the voting of the electorate. But I also think this speaks to bigger issues, and I do think abortion is different from something like single payer. But we've seen this kind of split in California happen, and Governor Jerry Brown weighed in on this recently, basically saying that there shouldn't be any sort of litmus test. And, you know, when you have Democrats running in a place like San Francisco, it does look very different than a Democrat running in somewhere like Fresno County, to give a California example. And so on a lot of issues, I think you're seeing a schism among people who really, you know, just want to see more people in state houses, in Congress with a D next to their name, or people that really think that, no, that doesn't even count unless you have sort of certain policy positions. And I think in California, it's interesting because our senators have sort of split in the opposite direction on this issue.
Yes, they have.
Then you would think Kamala Harris, who's considered more progressive, has said she will campaign for Democrats who are anti-choice, and Dianne Feinstein has said absolutely not. And so that's sort of a fascinating position to me. And I do wonder to some extent if that speaks to, you know, sort of where they're at in their careers, but also, you know, if things look different to Harris having just won the Senate seat.
Yeah. And as you touched on earlier, Jerry Brown and Nancy Pelosi both are against the idea of a litmus test. Interestingly, Senator Elizabeth Warren also said the same thing. She is against a litmus test, though she, of course, represents Massachusetts. Another listener writes, I wonder if the Democrats would be as willing to support a candidate who would take civil rights away from other groups. As far as I'm concerned, Roe v. Wade was a civil rights decision giving me liberty over my body. That Democrats would support candidates in so-called conservative states makes me wonder if they stand for anything at all. And let's hear from Joni in Los Gatos. Hi, Joni.
Good morning. One would think if they're considering their base or considering appealing to a wider base in the current climate, why in the world of all things would this suddenly come up? What about your base that's female? And I agree with your previous caller. I am out of here. If this becomes...
Where would you go, Joni?
I don't mean out of here. I mean out of the party.
Yes, I know. But who would you support, say? Would you support...
I would assume that this is going to create such an opening for someone, a Bernie Sanders type, someone to come in and pick up all those people that are so freaked out about this current administration, the attack on women's rights. We are going so backwards, and to me this represents caving. And I hate to use that word as if it's a fight or not being willing to compromise. However, I am not going to compromise on what I feel is my right as a woman, period.
Thanks for registering that, Joni. Clara Foran, how dangerous is it for Democrats if they go this route that they could lose elections over it?
Well, I think that it certainly does risk alienating, you know, as a number of callers, you know, for the show are sort of indicating, I think there's really a feeling of kind of betrayal among, you know, some women voters who have been even particularly more active, more politically active since the election. When you think about something like the Women's March, which really was a protest that kind of touched off what, you know, we're now sort of calling the resistance movement and something that subsequently has been embraced by Democrats. That was really something that that was actually organized around a set of common principles, including, you know, access to abortion and really galvanized the party's base. So I think it's hard to say, you know, will people who feel betrayed by this actually not vote for Democrats? That, you know, I can't answer, but I certainly think it's generating a lot of outrage among people precisely because there's this feeling of betrayal. And I think that's an argument the pro-choice activists are also trying to make, that the party can't afford to alienate its core supporters if it wants to win future elections.
Well, this listener writes, why does the left reject common sense restrictions on abortion that virtually every other country in the world adopts? And Joseph writes, these ideological Puritans need to tolerate diversity within the party. Clinging to identity politics excludes many who may be largely sympathetic to the Democratic Party. Are we in danger here, Marisa Lagos, of ideological purity and demanding ideological purity?
Well, to the first comment you read, I mean, I don't think that's an entirely fair statement. Saying that you're pro-choice doesn't, I mean, I think that encompasses a wide range of views. And even in states like California with wide ranging abortion rights, there are some limitations. But, you know, I would say that I think that this is one of those issues that we've heard the emotion. Like, this is something that beyond a lot of policy positions, people really do have strong, visceral and personal sort of associations with, right?
This is what they vote on?
I think so. And I remember during the Women's March, you heard from some people, you know, I wish the Democrats who are more towards the center are right, that, you know, I would support this if it wasn't for the pro-choice aspect. I mean, there was a little bit of pushback. But I think for a lot of men and women in the Democratic Party, it is one of those issues that it's a non-starter.
Well, let's hear from Gordon in Illinois. Hi, Gordon.
Hi. I'm a committed Democrat. I'm also pro-life. And I'm, you know, a very strong environmentalist. I'm very supportive of civil rights. I'm also a committed Christian. And I know too many people who were Democrats and left the party because of the predominant position of the Democratic Party being pro-choice. And I think that the party has to represent and be able to speak to all Americans. And for many Americans, this is the number one issue. And to simply close off
funding
positions,
yes.
People who hold positions because of strong personal.
Gordon, I think we're having slight trouble with your line, but I'm getting your point. And I wanted to ask you, so if the DCCC made the decision to no longer fund candidates who oppose abortion rights, would you say you're a committed Democrat, but would that make you leave the party? Sorry, Gordon. Maybe the phone issues extend, but we hear your point. Thank you, Marisa Lagos.
And I think that speaks to this point, right? Like, you're never going to make everybody happy. And having this as, you know, it's interesting to me because he's saying he's a Democrat, and clearly this has been part of the party platform and really...
You mean in terms of supporting abortion? Yeah. Rights, which they made a stronger move toward in 2016. Yes.
They did, but I think in general this has, again, like, this has been an issue that's been synonymous with Democrats for a very long time. And so I think in some ways it's more this conversation that risks alienating folks like him than actually the actions of Democrats.
Which is why so many Democratic leaders are trying to downplay, you know, sort of the significance of this, saying that it's overblown in terms of reaction, Claire Foran. How do you see our leaders trying to deal with this moving forward?
Yeah, I think that Democratic Party leaders are trying to strike sort of a very careful balance that obviously is not going to sit well with a lot of people who want just a clearer position. But basically what you've seen by and large from leaders from Nancy Pelosi to Chuck Schumer is sort of this idea of, they say, you know, hey, the platform is clear. We're a pro-choice party. That's the principles that we stand for. But at the same time, we're a big tent party, which is, you know, code for saying we will accept and tolerate people who in some cases deviate from, you know, the orthodoxy that's set out in the platform.
And how are our Republican leaders trying to frame this? That's happening in the Democratic Party. Claire Foran.
Well, I think that there's sort of a general push to kind of frame any movement from Democrats to say, you know, we're a big tent. We do accept pro-life Democrats in the party on the Republican side as disingenuous and sort of, you know, no, they really don't accept people who are pro-life, sort of framing it as, you know, don't listen to them as they try to reach out to pro-life Democrats. But one other point, too, that I want to just also make is that there are already pro-life Democrats, you know, in Congress right now.
Yes.
I'm talking about people like Senator Joe Manchin or Senator Joe Donnelly of Indiana. It certainly has been a shrinking number, which speaks to, I think, the fact that pro-life Democrats have been increasingly marginalized within the party. But that's one of the reasons, too, when you think about the fine line Democratic leaders are trying to walk. I mean, how can they say that pro-life Democrats aren't welcome when there are literally elected pro-life Democrats representing the party in the Senate, in the House right now? And some of them are in, you know, fiercely contested races that will be important for the party to win in 2018.
Well, Ron writes, first, these types of discussions should include a man guest to aid this balance. Secondly, I believe that the Dems should be willing to support a candidate who personally is against abortion as an individual, but must be for pro-choice as the party position to acknowledge a woman's right to choose. Whitfield writes, if the party doesn't have the possibility of supporting pro-life candidates, then it risks losing many Latino candidates and voters. Marisa Lagos, you look like you had a final thought you wanted to make here.
I just wonder if Ron would have that same comment if this was an all-male panel.
And Claire Foran, where would you leave us with this?
Oh, I'll just say that the point of, you know, drawing a distinction between personal belief and political belief is something that, you know, you already see that in the party as well. Somebody like Senator Tim Kaine is personally opposed to abortion, but says, you know, he supports the government shouldn't decide a woman's right to choose. So you have that represented in the party, too.
Claire Foran, associate editor of The Atlantic, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.
And Marisa Lagos, reporter at KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. Thanks as always.
Always a pleasure.
And thanks to our listeners for sharing their thoughts. I'm Mina Kim. Up next, we'll be talking about outside land, so stay with us. This is Forum.